This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
We're all hungry for a little nibbling of some delicious Chiefs talk. So here we go. Nom, 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 nom.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We have a very special guest, and finally, someone slightly more qualified to talk about the Chiefs' offensive line joining us now. It is Kansas City Chiefs legend, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Will Shields. Will, thank you very much for making some time for us here today.
Hey, no problem, man. Thanks for having me. It's you know, at this age, it's good to be seen.
I've always felt like it's good to be seen, so I don't know if that ever really changes. But it's good to get to see you, good to get to talk to you, and hopefully dig into some things here. The Chiefs have had a really interesting offseason, and you're a person that, like I said, just barely edges me out, I think, in terms of being qualified to talk about what the Chiefs did this offseason. But before I get to that, I want to let people know why you're here, what you're talking about, in addition to some Chiefs stuff today, talking about the Ford Proud to Honor Hall of Heroes, doing some work with them. People can go check all that out at FordProudToHonor.com. But can you talk a little bit on the front end about what you've been doing with them so far and what you just did with them?
You know, the coolest thing about it is that we want to honor those that have done things in the armed forces. You know, we have Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. And I got a chance to actually go meet, Mr. Buttigieg, if I could say his name right, I don't want to mess it up. But it's Buttigieg. And he is an awesome guy. And he actually, you know, still serves guys in different ways, even though he's out of the military. He helps with service animals and things of that nature that helps those sort of cope with having PTSD, as well as other things from being, you know, in the wartime and doing things that, you know, is necessary to keep us safe.
So if people want to go check that out, we'll talk about it a little bit more later on as well. If you go to FordProudToHonor.com, we'll learn a little more about that story, learn a little more about what they've been doing over the years, what they're doing in the future. Very cool. You can go check it out there at that URL. But I also have to ask about a whole bunch of things. I've definitely got more topics than we have time. But I mentioned, obviously, the Chiefs offseason story has been right across that offensive line. And I'm very curious to know what you think about not only, you know, the guys that they've brought into this point, but also the undertaking that it is to say we are pretty much left to right going to flip this entire unit over, in some cases because of injuries, in some cases because of age, in some cases because of performance. Really, the entire front five is going to look very different this year. How difficult must that be? Must that have been? And what will that challenge look like for all those guys this year?
Well, I think one thing they did that was really good is they addressed an issue that they knew that they were coming into with having one guy that got hurt, you know, with Fisher getting hurt, having the Achilles, and then having, you know, the guy that gets a little older, you know, that kind of thing, trying to get the youth back. But then they also, you know, get Tardif back from, you know, being away for COVID. So they had some of the pieces already in place, and they've added new pieces and added depth. I think they've done a good job. I mean, it's one of those things of where you say, well, what's the issue? What are they trying to build? And then they come back and go, well, we're going to add a guy that's, you know, a Pro Bowl talented, where a guy was a Pro Bowl talented or all pro talent. So they replaced one guy with another guy. And can they mesh? Can they pull it together? I think because of the talent that's around them that you can't help but to get better. And I think that's what's going to be, you know, the cohesiveness that they're going to have to build right now during the offseason to get them to where they want to go. I mean, the talent level you've seen across the board of the guys that they brought in, the quality of what they brought in. Now the question is, can we get them to all work together and be healthy? That's the other choice of what you have to do. But I think when you have the Mahomes of the world and Hills of the world and, you know, Kelsey's of the world, that you can't help but try to be a little better than what you are just to sort of try to get back, get an opportunity to play in the Super Bowl.
Well, and you mentioned the health is obviously such a huge deal last year as they just got worn down over the course of the year, one guy after another. But one of the guys they gave a whole bunch of money to is a guard, Joe Tooney, and who so far in his career has not missed a game. He hasn't played the number of years that you did, but that's something incredible that you have in common. Is there a science to being healthy and being available all the time? Is that something that you think you can kind of look at as an asset for Joe Tooney, as it obviously was throughout your career?
I think so. I mean, because the simple fact of it is, the more you play, the better you get, the more consistent you are, the more little nuances that you know what to do to try to stay healthy. And that's the cool thing about it is if you've seen how many games he's played in a row, that means he knows how to take care of his body. He knows when to shut it down when he needs to. And he knows what he needs to have to happen to be, you know, be productive, but also to be available every week. And that's one of those things that's very hard to do, is to be available week in and week out. Now, of course, we know there's some of those freak accidents that could happen here and there, but so far so good. And that's what you want to prepare for, is that person that could be there every week, week in and out, that's stable.
The cohesiveness of that unit is going to be interesting to me, and it's something I have to ask you about from your time on really a few different sort of little iterations of dominant offensive lines here. But I was watching an interview that Ray Lewis had done a few years back, and there were a couple of things there that were fascinating. But one of them was how frustrating it was to him, not only that that line was made up of just mauler after mauler, but also that he specifically pointed out that you guys had a communication across the board where everybody left or right of you knew what you were saying, what you were calling for each other, and what that was about to mean for the defense. How long does it take in your mind for a completely new offensive group like this one to gel and then to get to a point where everyone's comfortable? And then how long before everyone gets to a point where you're reading each other's thoughts based off of what the defense is showing you?
Well, and one thing about it that comes through, it comes buy-in. You know, you've got to get that buy-in to trust the system and see what the system has done in the past. And once you've seen what the system does in the past, it makes it go so much faster. If you're putting in a new system that you've never seen work or you've never been in, you're going, oh, I don't know if I trust that. I'm not sure if this is going to work. But when somebody can pull out film and go, hey, this is what we do, this is how we do it, and this is why it works, then you get buy-in. And then you start learning the little nuances of, okay, this is what I do on this play, but what does he do? Mm-hmm. And once you start learning what the guy next to you does and how they do it, then that's when you become more cohesive and you know what his weaknesses and strengths are. And that's where you build off of it. And that's when you start knowing what they're thinking and how they're thinking. You're going like, oh, well, he called this play. You know, he's going to struggle with this. He's been struggling with it all week. So we're going to have to do this, this, and this to help him out. And I think that's where you have to, as an offensive line, understand that we're not going to be perfect in everything that we do. Some people we face are just going to give us a hard time, regardless of what we try to do to them, just because they've got our number. So you've got to be able to help that person out when they're in that situation so that we can get through that game and get to the next piece. And I think that's what they're going to have to figure out, is what are the strengths and weaknesses of each guy, and then try to build off of it. And then that's when you become that guy that, oh, well, you grunt or you say this or you say that. You're like, some guys go, I don't like pulling on this play. So every chance I get to get out of not pulling on this play, I'm going to tell you, I want you to pull. Right. So then it becomes second nature of, oh, well, it's this play he hates to pull on, or he hates to do this. So I'm going to just do it, or he's going to do it, or what you call it. So, you know, you start learning those little pieces, nuances. And I think that's one thing that you have to sort of have to be around each other and notice the hard question of what can you do and what can't you do, because not everybody's that perfect, prototypical, I can do everything kind of offensive lineman. He's just not built that way.
Yeah, I think that's something that honestly I haven't thought all that much about it in terms of like the communication of acknowledging the weaknesses of the guys around you, and then what can you do to step in and fix that. That's really interesting. It's something that I'll be looking for from this point on. You mentioned, you know, sometimes you just have guys that end up having your number. If I ask, who gave you the most trouble over a long Hall of Fame career, do you have an answer that jumps to mind, or you say, oh, this mother bleeper, this guy here just gave me fits?
Easily. There was a couple of guys that gave you fits. I mean, John Randall's one that pops off your head right away. Trevor Price was another guy that pops right off your head. You know, there's a bunch of guys that you're looking at, I'm like, ooh, they had this one move that I just couldn't figure out. You know, I just was trying to say, please don't throw it on me at this point so that I can get through this play or get through the part of the game. And that's what made it unique, is that every week it was a different guy that you had to face, that you were trying to figure out what technique works well on them. And they're trying to find out, where's your weakness? How do I beat you? And so that's what also made it fun. It made it interesting as far as being able to play and trying to play at a high level every week.
Was there somebody that you felt like, this is an excellent player, but I can tell I am making them mad? This is maybe I'm their answer to that question.
Well, I don't know. I just go through the game of when I know that I'm having a good time and I'm laughing a lot and doing those kind of things, that's when I know that, you know, my game should be pretty good on tape. It should be, you know, pretty good testing out when I go back and they do all the little marks on everything. You know, if I'm having fun, that means I know what I'm doing. I know who I have, and I'm taking care of business. When I'm stressed and struggling and that kind of stuff, then it's a whole different animal. He's like, oh my gosh, what is he doing next? What's going to happen next? Where's this guy blitzing from? Right. And so those are the little things that, you know, get to you, or, you know, you can't sleep at night the day before. You're going, yeah, this person's giving me a little bit of fits, or this defense is going to give us fits and we're going to have to worry about it. But you know, the game itself is what you love about it. It's the simple fact of it. It is a chess match with human bodies, yeah. Giving them the opportunity to go out and compete every week. And that's what's going to be cool about this year, is that looking at all the new pieces that they've added and seeing how they control the narrative of what they do week in and week out. And I know you have a great offensive unit around you, and just putting those pieces together of saying, hey, if I can give you 2.5 seconds to 3 seconds, what can you accomplish? Well, what can you accomplish if you gave me 4?
Right.
You know, and that's the question that you have to ask. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to build that next group behind them so that you can keep having that opportunity to, you know, play for the big ring.
Yeah. There are a lot of things that I think you've talked about from your time that are like a one-to-one, like, yeah, that makes 100% totally translates to now. But also there's a lot of places where obviously the league has changed, offenses have changed. I don't know how much you think offensive line play has changed though. So what do you think of the way that offenses, even the Chiefs offense today versus the many Chiefs offenses that you were a part of, the evolution of the sport in that way? What do you make of it that we've seen over the last, even the last 10 years, if not the last 20?
Well, what makes it unique is that they, you know, the rules have changed here and there to mm-hmm. for player safety and, you know, more opportunities for those to get down the field, make plays and do different things. And I think that's very important, but also the safety pieces is the most important piece about trying to keep your head out of the game as much and, you know, trying to keep yourself upright and doing different things. And so with that, they've added more rules of where you can use your hands more, more liberal about you using your hands so that you don't have to use your head, which makes sense. You know, it makes the game safer. It makes people, you know, having to use their more body positioning than it is, more than running someone over. Because, you know, used to have that thing, put your head in there and run them over. No, we don't do that anymore. No. You know, it's, you know, we used to call it the part of negotiating space. So now you really have to negotiate space very, very smart and diligently. And that's what makes it a different kind of game. You know, it does ample a little more of the passing game and being able to utilize that more off. But also, you know, the change, you know, the more quarterbacks that are using more read option and different keys than was different than when we were playing, the bounce motions and stuff like that. You know, we didn't use that. It was more or less the guy get to the end of the line of scrimmage, you knew the ball was going to be snapped somewhere in there. You know, we didn't have all those little intricate details and things that they use right now on a consistent basis. And that's what makes it, you know, the evolution of the game. There's more college things that were used at one point that's now in the pros that basically said, hey, that would never work in the pros. And now they're figuring out ways of, well, it can work. It's just you got to have the right athletes in the right position to make it work. And I think that's what's really cool. The game is always going to evolve. But we also got to realize that we still got to get our younger kids how to play it safe, and how to learn how to, you know, utilize the game and enjoy the game from a young age.
One more question for that's very, very big picture, but it's something that I've gotten to talk to players from Bobby Bell to Dante Hall about that have had sort of similar feelings on this. Whenever the Chiefs won the Super Bowl 2 years back, obviously, we don't need to go back to last year. We're skipping that one. but whenever the Chiefs did win, you know, the first Super Bowl in most of our lifetimes, right? A lot of those guys on kind of those teams in the middle where you have incredible units and incredible talent and some great teams and some great coaching, but never completely got it done. It felt like for many of these guys that there was still sort of a sense of Kansas City Chiefs throughout history were winning the Super Bowl. Also, I know that there's a very real difference, I'm sure, between actually being able to play in the game and win it versus seeing a team win it decades later. But with sort of the connective tissue that it seems like this team has to its history, that's popped up a few times. I don't know if you can speak to that or if that's been your experience at all.
And I think it sort of works not only within the, you know, pro ranks, it works in college ranks. If you've ever seen a college team win a national championship, if you've been anywhere 5 years before that happened or 10 years before that happens, you feel like you're a part of that group because you're you've done some things that help contribute to it. And that's where you're going, oh yeah, I remember that guy, or I beat up on that guy. I can't believe they have, you know, they have a championship. And so you're a part of that lineage. You're part of that group. And you know, that's one thing about it, is because you did that blood, sweat, and tears piece of it. And you might not be the one that's on the field winning the Super Bowl, but you felt like you contributed to it because you've been there in the locker room. And that was the goal you were trying to attain at the same time. And so, yeah, you feel like you're a part of it. You feel that, you know, that sort of pump out your chest, and you can, you know, you wear the colors a little more and that kind of thing when you see things that are going well for it, because you have that vibe of when you were there, that's what you were trying to do.
And the red just happens to go pretty well with the gold jackets. Your wardrobe is pretty well figured out at this point.
It does. It goes really well.
Will, thank you very much for making some time. Again, if you want to check out more about the Ford Proud to Honor Hall of Heroes, you can go to FordProudToHonor.com. Tell people one more time why what that cause is working for, why you're working with them, why it's important to you.
Well, and what's really cool is that they give out scholarships to the Pat Tillman Foundation for all of these heroes that have done excellent things as far as services, but now they're back in school, but still giving back to the community that they serve in. You know, it's important for us to support those that have supported us in so many different ways. And with me being a military kid, you know, I always think about when my dad was going off to work in the mornings, and, you know, we lived right off the artillery base. So in the mornings, we would hear all the mortar fire of them practicing and stuff like that. You know, we weren't ever in the war, but we knew what it felt like for them to prepare for it. And, you know, it's a special group of people that's given to us. And that's what we have to do, is give back and give them opportunity to grow.
Will Shields, thank you very much for the time. Hopefully we'll get to chat again soon. Hopefully next time we're talking about another ring and a Chiefs offensive line that is doing something that you guys got to do for 3 or 4 or 5 or maybe 10 straight years. Hopefully we'll talk again sometime before that.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
The Chiefs are pork butts. There's a floor to pork butts. They're hard to screw up. You know they're going to be good on some level, but you need a good rub or even a good barbecue sauce after it's cooked to spice it up a little. Andy Reid is slow and steady, just like that 9-pound pork butt they've been smoking all night in the Arrowhead parking lot.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Pro Football Hall of Famer Will Shields for joining us. It's not the first Hall of Famer we've had on the show, because we had Radio Row a couple years ago. Yep. I think we might have had a couple. First Chiefs Hall of Famer specifically on AES, though? I think so.
I believe we
had Dante Hall at one point, mm-hmm. and a legend in his own right. Did the show with Bobby Bell that I mentioned, but that was a different show technically. So Will Shields, once again, making history. Maybe the most important thing. It hasn't popped up on his Pro Football Reference page yet that he was on this show tonight, but hopefully soon.
Well, they wait till the day after to update their pages.
That makes sense. That's true.
You can't get day of, you know, updated highlights. So tomorrow.
Tomorrow it should be up there where it should say, you know, Hall of Famer, 97-time Pro Bowler, all of those, 94-time All-Pro on Almost Entirely Sports. Again, to support what he's working with right now, you can go check out the Ford Proud to Honor Hall of Heroes, all the work that they do, at FordProudToHonor.com. It'd be cool if you'd go check it out. They got some good stories on there, including the one that Will told us at the beginning of that last segment. So check it out there, FordProudToHonor.com. A few things from that I wanted to talk about and like unpack a little bit before we move on to talking about, you know, some Aaron Rodgers and Alex Smith stuff, as I continue to promise that we'll eventually get some of that audio. And we probably will. Kent Swanson joining us here in about half an hour. But one of the things that obviously just talking about the Chiefs' reconstruction of the offensive line this offseason was top of my mind, because Will Shields was a part, a vital Hall of Fame part, mm-hmm. of a decade of dominant offensive lines. And there were a few moving parts over the course of a decade, but not a ton of them. the continuity stuff, I think, is really interesting. Where, you know, again, I was watching the interview of Ray Lewis on with Colin Cowherd several years ago, talking about specifically, he brought up, like, this Chiefs offensive line was so bleeping frustrating. There's also some highlights of him, like, mic'd up on the sidelines, of Ray Lewis mic'd up during a Chiefs-Ravens game, and him talking about how it is impossible how much he is getting doubled because they're hitting their guys, they're communicating. Dude,
yep.
It's so good.
Yep.
Because they're taking care of business, and then they're getting to the second level, and all of a sudden, Ray Lewis being walked out of a play. There's another highlight of Will Shields coming around and pretty much pancaking Ray Lewis as Priest Holmes uses Will Shields' back like a ramp.
Yep.
And just goes up over touchdown. There's some great stuff there. But, you know, he talked about being able to essentially communicate with a grunt. That doesn't come immediately for everybody. And it's also one of those reasons that I kind of hope that Lucas Niang and Creed Humphrey, there are lots of reasons I'm hoping this, but I hope they end up starting week one if they can, mm-hmm. because you can start to build some more continuity with that unit. I want Creed Humphrey and Joe Tooney to play next to each other for the next 4 or 5 years, as both of their contracts will take them through that, because the plan is for them to do that. And by year 3 and 4, they're going to know things about how each of them take on different types of players that I said this to Will, I just don't think about it quite that way, especially, we talk about continuity, but especially whenever you talk about guys knowing their teammates' weaknesses. It was such an interesting way that he framed that, I thought, because whenever we think about continuity, we think about teammates knowing the strengths of their teammates and being able to communicate on things. But what you really need to be able to do is to say, all right, I'm in a spot right now where I have a chance to help. Where is my help going to go? Am I going to go second level, whatever? Well, if you know that this dude to your right has been struggling with this type of pass rusher or been struggling to move this guy out of this gap in the run game or whatever, to be very vague and also very sort of, you know, minute. Well, if you know that that's what you're expecting from your teammate who is having that same struggle over and over, you're already thinking, you're already helping him before you even know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You're preparing for maybe that guy to fall into your lap, or you're preparing for a twist or a stunt or whatever that maybe is going to give your teammate some trouble, but you're in a position to fix. And then also that reciprocates where you go, man, I don't want to pull here, you know, or I'm afraid that this matchup is something that's going to keep my hands pretty full. If your teammate knows that that's already something you're dealing with, that is easier to communicate than ever because they're already thinking about it. Maybe that communication doesn't even fully happen. Like, I just think that that side of things is so interesting because it's something that is so difficult to accurately represent without really kind of being in it. And so it's one of those times that having someone who did it at an unbelievably high level for an unbelievably long time, I think, provides some really valuable insight. Also, specifically to Joe Tooney, that idea that he's been healthy, he's played every game. Joe Tooney's played every game of his career. Will Shields has played every game of his career. And Will obviously did it for, you know, two and a half times as long or something as Tooney's done it so far.
In an era where, I assume run blocking puts, and maybe there's just wrong with this, I'm just wrong about this, I would assume run blocking can put you at more risk for injury because you just end up in more piles, it feels like, and that's when guys can just freak injuries, roll up.
Guys don't really run into your back.
And your leg goes.
On a pass play, sure. But whenever they signed Tooney, one of the big sort of selling points was this man has been there for every single game with the Patriots to this point. And it was one of those things that I kind of asked. I don't feel like I was super definitive and don't want to be super definitive about it now. But it's one of those things where I think you have to ask, how predictive is stuff like that? Is there a science to it? Is it luck? And of course, luck is involved.
Yeah.
Eric Fisher's Achilles didn't tear because he wasn't taking care of his body.
Yeah.
You know, that's a freak issue. Back injury from Mitch Schwartz, that stuff happens. But I do kind of like the idea of what Will said last segment of, well, whenever you've been available for that stretch of time, it's shown that you've done that. Nothing in sports is ever guaranteed. No result is ever 100% predictive of the next time out. But you would rather have that positive check on your resume where it's just something that you've been able to show to the world. So again, I don't know if Joe Tooney's going to play every snap of every game his entire time in Kansas City. I don't know. I'm still like a bit hesitant about all the money they ended up paying for him and all of that. Those things are all going to be things that we'll find out over years to come. I also very much understand why they brought him in. But to be able to have a piece there with, you want to talk about building a dominant line for years and years to come, left tackle should be Orlando Brown Jr. for a very long time.
Yeah.
Left guard should be Joe Tooney for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Both expensive. Center should be Creed Humphrey for a very long time.
Rookie deal.
Right tackle should be Lucas Niang, hopefully. No lock there. I think probably the least lock of any of those four guys. But rookie deal, third round pick, Chiefs seem to like him.
Yeah.
Right guard is the spot, ironically enough, talking to Will Shields, is the spot that might have a little bit of rotation. But right now, if you're replacing one spot on your offensive line next offseason, as opposed to overhauling the entire thing this year, and then maybe that right guard spot, maybe it ends up being Trey Smith. Maybe you have another rookie deal there who's a guy that's there for 3 or 4 years.
Which all of a sudden now, when you can pay a left tackle, which, again, if everything goes the way it should go, the way Chiefs fans should hope it goes, Orlando Brown's going to get a lot of money.
Yep.
Because we want Orlando Brown to be great this year, and if he's great, the Chiefs will give him a lot of money.
Yep.
That is the ultimate goal here. If you have him and Tooney making a ton of money, you offset that by having a rookie center, a rookie deal center, a rookie deal right guard, and a rookie deal right tackle.
Yep.
And maybe if ultimately, again, you don't feel like Trey Smith is the guy, right? Maybe you still don't think he's ready. Then maybe it's going out, and maybe that's re-signing Kyle Long, whatever it is. At that point, it's re-signing a veteran right guard at a pretty minimal deal, right? Yep. Like, that's how you offset those big contracts on
it's
the left side.
It's your Andrew Wiley sort of type.
There's always,
that was one of the things with the guard overhauling this offseason that I had my hesitance about, was like, there is always sort of a guy that you can do that with, and I think you can certainly do that at a position, but the Chiefs' goal clearly is to be an offensive line that is not only good at a couple of spots, but the weakest link is a Pro Bowler.
And
that's their plan right now.
And the offensive line is all about the weakest link. Like the offensive line, you see this in various sports, right? Where like basketball, it's all about the strongest link, right? It's it's who is your best. And to a degree, it's like that in football overall, because it comes down to the quarterback.
Yep.
It's do you have the best quarterback or not?
And even your pass catchers, your pass rushers.
Offensive line's a spot where it comes down to time and time again about the weakest link, because defenses will attack that weakest link.
Yep.
If the weakest link, and so now all of a sudden, if the weakest link is right guard, or it is right tackle, or it is center for whatever reason, though, by having these other guys, right? Like, let's say it is Creed Humphrey this year, because he's a rookie center, and it's a tough position to learn. But if he's got Joe Tooney on his left and he's got LDT or Kyle Long on his right, like you said, and those guys start to play with each other, they just start to automatically know what they need to do. And instinct just kicks in.
Yeah.
They're now able to help Creed Humphrey to overmask some of his issues, to where now he can focus more on his strengths and the whole offensive line just kind of comes together.
The one other thing is that the idea, and we've talked about this a little bit, but the idea of the Chiefs going from, hey, Pat, we're going to try to get you 2.5 seconds here. Let's just keep working quick. Mm-hmm. Let's get the ball out of your hand quickly and all that stuff. That's been fine. I mean, it's been very good. The Chiefs offense has been excellent with Patrick Mahomes. But the idea of, what can you do if we give you 4? Well, that's an extra second and a half of Tyreek Hill getting downfield. Obviously, he's not waiting until the very end to throw the ball or whatever sometimes, but you have more time to create separation.
And you feel
Travis Kelce has more time to work on on some poor defender who probably wasn't going to cover him for 2 seconds, but sure as hell isn't going to cover him for 4 seconds. You have a chance to look over the entire field, see what's developing, what's opening up. So I am hopeful that all of these investments will create something as tangible as that, because I really do think that if this offensive line goes from, and this isn't a fair comparison for reasons I'll clarify, but if it goes from what we saw in the Super Bowl to being something that other teams get through as the exception, it's going to be hilarious. I mean, it's just going to be outrageously funny to watch Patrick Mahomes work behind a brick wall.
when Brett Veach, again, Brett Veach is still a pretty young GM, but there are still things that we are learning about that I think it's pretty clear. When he sees a weakness, he doesn't just fix it.
No.
He is fortifying it.
He's tearing it down. Yeah. I mean, he's bringing in a wrecking ball, starting over.
But then it's just like, it's not just like a little minor repair. No, it's a fortress now. Like,
yeah.
he's all about turning the team's biggest weakness to a strength. I was just thinking about this, I think, this morning, where I always talk about how not wanting Patrick Mahomes being in a situation with Aaron Rodgers. And then I started thinking about it. He probably never will, because the second there's a year where the Chiefs receivers are bad, Brett Veach is probably going to go trade for a top five receiver, go trade up in the draft for a top five receiver. Yeah. You know what I mean? It'll probably just be this massive overhaul all of a sudden at receiver. And fortunately, that day is probably years away because of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. But like, we're probably not going to have to worry about that for too terribly long.
Yeah.
Maybe because the second they have that year, he's just based off his history, he will bring in he will get all the nuclear weapons for that position again.
Yeah, I think you're right. So good stuff there. If you missed any of it, we podcast everything here on Almost Entirely Sports. So if you miss any of our conversation with Will Shields, go to aes.show in your browser, and it'll give you all of the places you can subscribe to the show, or you can just search for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts. Rudy mentioned Aaron Rodgers. He has made a couple of headlines, and has also had a couple of funny things. Also, Alex Smith sounded off on Aaron Rodgers in a way that I think is pretty interesting. We'll bring you some of that whenever we come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Where it sounds like I said the phrase, Patrick Mahomes is Aaron Rodgers. I actually said that Patrick Mahomes is better than Aaron Rodgers.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Meant to get to some of this audio yesterday. Certainly meant to get to some of it today. Here we are. It's how the show works. Aaron Rodgers was on SportsCenter, not last night, but the night before.
Oh, hang on. I need to open that one.
What did you think? I had
the stuff for today open.
We're going to work our way through it.
Okay, I'll get it open.
In the meantime, I'll read you what Aaron Rodgers has been doing. This is from PopSugar.com. I'm using this source for a very particular reason. Shailene Woodley and Aaron Rodgers, in that order, soak up the Hawaiian sun with Miles Teller and his wife. His wife's name is Kaylee. I don't know her from anything, but I feel like she deserves to have her name. Here's three people you know, and then also Miles Teller's wife. The four of them are vacationing in Hawaii, and there was a video from Miles Teller's wife on Instagram of her and Aaron Rodgers.
What's her name again?
Kaylee. Just vibing out incredibly, incredibly hard to a Taylor Swift song while sort of hovering over a bottle of what I imagine to be mostly empty wine. And it just, if you haven't seen the video yet, you got to go see it just because that's on my vision board, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to achieve sort of that level of zen, even if it's just for a few moments every once in a while. I just think there's just a soul elevation there. The reason that I go to PopSugar.com is because I think it's very funny to read this story that is very much a pop culture story from a pop culture site that includes a sportsman. Because it starts with this here. Aaron Rodgers and Shailene Woodley's relationship feels like the gift that keeps on giving. And if that was on a sports site, your head would explode. But here, it makes a little sense.
The guy who, I guess, owns that site follows me on Twitter.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
He does.
Guessing he's a relatively wealthy man.
I would think so.
So that is all. That's all fun, and also that's what he's doing instead of being at OTAs along with every Green Bay Packers wide receiver, which is also kind of funny. But he was on with Kenny Mayne for Kenny Mayne's last SportsCenter again two nights ago, and I want to play the longer clip first here, Beards, of him kind of giving what I think. And this might be just me reading way too far into some social posts and a few clips, but I think this is a pretty reasonable, healthy mindset that he has about the Packers at this point, even though it's blown up into such a sort of dramatic potential shift in the league.
With my situation, look, it's never been about never been about the draft pick, picking Jordan. I love Jordan; he's a great kid. A lot of fun to work together. I love the coaching staff, love my teammates, love the fan base in Green Bay. It's incredible 16 years. It's just kind of about a philosophy, and maybe forgetting that it is about the people that make the thing go. It's about It's about character. It's about culture. It's about doing things the right way. And a lot of this was put in motion last year, and the wrench was just kind of thrown into it when I won MVP and played the way I played last year. So this is just kind of, I think, the spill out of all that. But look, man, it is about the people, and that's the most important thing. Green Bay has always been about the people, from Curly Lambeau being owner and founder to the 60s with Lombardi and Bart Starr and all those incredible names, to the 90s teams with Coach Holmgren and Farvey and the Minister of Defense, to the run that we've been on. It's about the people.
That is either a I'm going to amend this. I think that is a masterclass of what you say in a situation like this. He invokes character and culture and Curly Lambeau. And you know, it's just about the people. And I think it's partially in his delivery also, but he just sort of seems like a dude who just decided somewhere along the way, I'm kind of tired of being unnecessarily miserable for all of this.
Yeah.
You know what, man? You drafted a quarterback and you didn't tell me about it. Can I just go? I feel like that's what he's. I feel like the question is, man, can I just go though? I don't need this. I'm not having fun here. I'd rather just go somewhere else with a cooler vibe. And man, that just comes off to me as being eminently reasonable. As a guy who's been there for a very long time, who feels sort of disrespected, sort of betrayed, him performing at an MVP level threw a wrench in their plans, is what he said there. If you feel like you being so good at your job is actually detrimental to what your company has planned around you, that would feel pretty bad. He was the MVP of the league, and that was a wrench thrown into the Packers' plans. And again, maybe it's because he's sort of delivering everything, doing an impression of the dude from the Big Lebowski at this point.
I was trying to figure out, he sounded like somebody, but I couldn't pin down who it was.
It's a lot, it's the dude, but there is something else there that I haven't been able to fully pinpoint either. I'll take suggestions if you think of it.
I can't think of anything currently.
But it's just kind of in there. It's just look, man, it's just about the people and respect and doing things the right way, and I love the players and I love the fans and Curly Lambeau. I think it's got, and if you're a Packers fan, maybe this isn't the case. I would find it incredibly hard to listen to that audio and go, he's the bad guy, or he's out of, or even that there is a bad guy, that he's out of line. I just don't see that there. Did you have something, Rudy?
I was going to say he's giving off some pretty strong. The delivery's a little different, but some pretty strong McConaughey.
That's vibes. You know what, man? You said the delivery's different, and then I read your mind.
Yeah.
Yes.
It would be it's not quite. It's not quite the McConaughey saying weirder words that make you
sure.
Make you a little bit huh?
But right.
It's
kind of
that kind of vibe.
It's just kind of in here. It's kind of Big Lebowski meets Matthew McConaughey with a little less twang.
Maybe
Bill
Clinton. Bill
Clinton. Every impression leads back to Bill Clinton in this house. But yeah, I think that is it. I think it's Matthew McConaughey meets the dude. I think that's exactly what it is.
Also, in the video,
yeah,
little mini man bun going on.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Got a little top knot
so,
back there.
Here's the thing:
white T-shirt in Hawaii, just vibing out. Dude.
You forget because he's been in Green Bay for the last decade plus, and also you just think of Aaron Rodgers being more like Brett Favre personality-wise, but he's a Cali boy.
Yeah.
Rodgers is a chill Cali boy.
Yeah. I think it might be projecting, and we're going to get Alex Smith, I want you to hear from in a second. You know what?
Also play, Cali boy.
Beards, play the end of Kenny Mayne's sign-off to Aaron Rodgers, please.
Hey, just last thing. Last time we did the interview together, you told me to go heavy in the cryptocurrency game. I did. We're down 40%. Then I lost my job. Gretchen just wants a new comforter. F*** you, Aaron Rodgers.
I love Kenny Mayne.
I love you, Ken.
Walked off the set after that. F you, Aaron Rodgers. Walked off the set. How good is that, man?
Think that F you really was meant for Aaron Rodgers? Or
God, I don't know. That's a good question.
He's a treat, man. Some of my favorite Sports Center memories, just growing up, are Kenny Mayne.
Yeah, he's the best. He's great.
So good.
And they wanted him to take a 60% pay cut. Good work,
so
ESPN.
Good.
Beards, let's skip the Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. We might circle back to that. We might play that one in a second. But the second Alex Smith clip is the one that that I want to talk about here a little bit. He was on The Herd with Colin Cowherd. This has the question in it and everything. So it'll give you all the context you need on this one.
Final question. How surprised are you how ugly Aaron Rodgers and the Packers has become? Surprised?
It's inexcusable. It's absolutely, I think.
What do you mean?
How they ever got to this point. I mean, Aaron's been there 16 years, what he's given to that organization and been there. And for them, I think, to what happened last year during the draft, and I haven't talked to Aaron about this, so I don't want to like put words in his mouth, but clearly to watch the interview and him talk about it, it's about the people. And it is, and Aaron's been there that long, and I don't think it was the fact that they drafted Jordan Love in the first round. I mean, I think of the fact that you just how do you have a guy like Aaron and you don't go make sure beforehand you aren't going out of your way to make sure that he knows that he's loved, that they want him there, that we may be taking a quarterback in the first round. We want to make sure you're okay with it. This is maybe what we're doing. We're thinking. I mean, how you haven't treated him the right way leading up to that and to the fact that, from my understanding, it's kind of like it was a bit of an unknown, a bit blindsided. You know, you go from potentially thinking you may be taking a receiver, you know, you're thinking you're a move away from the Super Bowl.
Right.
And then blindsided with a pick. I just don't understand how an organization, how you haven't addressed that beforehand when you make a move like that and really made sure that everything is tightened up and everybody's feeling good about that. Because if it's not, you're not doing it, in my opinion. You're just not. It's just not the way you run a business. It's not the way you're treating people. 16 years this guy's been there. You were on the doorstep of the Super Bowl, and you don't go out of your way to communicate that and to show that he's, you know, that, hey, you're wanted. This may be something we're doing, sorry. And, you know, but, like, you don't make sure that everybody's on the same page and feeling good about that. I think, you know, it's not just football. That's any business or team.
Yeah. Did Kansas City give you a heads up on Mahomes?
Yes, without a doubt. With 100%. I mean, that's something that was talked about throughout the draft process, not just by Coach Reed, everybody involved in the personnel department. Yeah. And I'm talking multiple times. Hey, this really might be something we're doing. Are you okay with it? This is going to be the situation. This is, I mean, you know, like there were no surprises. I mean, it was absolutely laid out for me. And I think that all helps, you know, that when that stuff's communicated, it does make a difference how you treat people.
The last line would be the way, if we only would have had about 5 seconds to play that audio, we could have just done that. But it's just really good stuff, man. Yeah. And also, watching the larger chunk of it, and I don't know, maybe we'll play that other one for Kent at some point. Maybe we won't. It was him talking about Patrick Mahomes being great. We've heard Alex Smith be honest about that. Yeah. This is the half of it that I thought was really kind of moving, because it ends up being a bit of a mixed bag of Alex Smith saying he has lit a couple of organizations on fire lately, where he said he didn't feel like Washington really wanted him.
Mm-hmm.
He is let down by Green Bay in this instance from afar, praising what the Chiefs did, how the Chiefs handled all of that.
That's because you're all, but the emotion too, right? Like going off like the Chiefs thing, like that emotion he showed there was. That's something you see from Alex Smith all the time.
He started by calling it inexcusable.
Yeah.
Like, and not even anything specific. The situation as a whole, it's inexcusable. And the people matter. Hey, how do you not communicate that with your star, your MVP? How do you not even communicate that?
The Vikings told Kirk Cousins they were looking at a quarterback. Like, Kirk Cousins got that respect.
I just think it's really interesting. And I think also this is something that came up in the Twitch chat earlier of somebody talking about hating Tom Brady. And I saw a lot of people.
Wallaby, I believe. Yes, Wallaby.
A lot of people had tweeted about this today, because he's tweeting about Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers. And I think they're all playing golf soon.
Yeah.
And Tom Brady is really good at Twitter. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of it is him. I don't know. His social media platforms have been very good.
Very good.
And there's something to these guys, these quarterbacks, and I'm putting Alex Smith in this equation. He obviously didn't have Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady's career, but there's something about these quarterbacks getting a little bit older and just and not having this energy that they are living their life constantly grinding their teeth down to dust, which is what Tom Brady was for 20 bleeping years. Yep. It's what Aaron Rodgers was for a decade and a half. It's what Alex Smith was so at the worst part in San Francisco. He probably felt quite small, quite densely packed. But you find these guys in better situations or trying to get to better situations. Alex Smith ended up in Kansas City, which he praises at every turn of this. Like he was almost indignant about Colin's question there, which I think is kind of interesting because, and he's talked about that many times also. Yeah. But it's like, yeah, dude, absolutely. They told me like 15 times that they might end up taking a quarterback, and they wanted to make sure that that was communicated with me and that I felt okay about it as a person because they thought about that stuff. It's like, oh, yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. That would be, like, the sign of a good organization and also, like, healthy for everyone. Mm-hmm. Jordan Love probably wishes he was in a different situation right now. Patrick Mahomes never had that problem.
Nope.
Patrick Mahomes, look, you give me a time machine and you let me decide if Patrick Mahomes is starting as a rookie. I would like to see it. But in the world that they got to occupy, there was a peaceful transition of power planned. No one was storming any important buildings. Yep. There was a peaceful transition of power. And everybody knew, everyone's cards were on the table within that organization, within this organization here in Kansas City, as opposed to just everything getting so hostile. And so Tom Brady eventually leaves New England. And I don't think he hates them. What?
I said he basically went to college.
Pretty much, yeah.
Finally got away from dad, went to college, had fun. Right.
I don't think he hated it there, and I don't think that Aaron Rodgers has largely hated his time in Green Bay or anything. Yeah. But he finally leaves Belichick, and he finally leaves New England, and he goes to Tampa and starts and gets absolutely sloshed off of like one sniff of half a shot of tequila. And
I mean, I think it was actually tap water.
Probably Florida tap water. Who knows?
Well, it's just tap water in general. It's like he's used to drinking that filtered water. So tap water, sure. He's just hammered drunk.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's like the scene from Parks and Rec with, he says his full name so many times.
Are you talking about Ron Swanson? No.
Nope.
Oh, bleep.
I'm talking about. He looks like the GM of the Lakers. I can't even think of the actor's name right now. Holy bleep!
Rob Lowe.
Rob Lowe. It's Rob Lowe's character who says his name all the time that I cannot currently think of. But at one point, he says like a speck of dust would, or a piece of sand would totally derail him. And that maybe that's where Tom Brady was at. But like he gets out of New England.
Chris Traeger.
Thank you. Nailed it. Got it before the end of the hour. He gets out of New England and like. Just loosens up a little bit. His vibe seems better. Aaron Rodgers' vibe right now is clearly the best that it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want to go to an organization that doesn't appreciate that.
He wants what Brady had got.
Yeah.
He's trying to find his Tampa.
Aaron Rodgers might take the field next year with his hair covering his nameplate like Troy Polamalu. He may never cut his hair again, and it might be the thing that works. Maybe he's Samson. Maybe he just keeps getting stronger and stronger as his hair gets longer and longer. I don't know.
I hope not.
But it's just, I find it so interesting, especially whenever a guy like Alex Smith, who is barely out of the league, is willing to turn around and go, that's inexcusable. My team did it in a way where everyone felt respected and all that. You know the other thing that those three quarterbacks have in common? Ruggedly handsome. Kit Swanson is next!
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.